Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music first. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from Britannica.com and Southern Living. Question number one, why is this coming Friday known as Black Friday? Is it A, it's a moody day, given all the overeating the day before? Is it B, it's the darkest day of the year in terms of hours of sunlight? Is it C, it's the brightest day of the year for shoppers and merchants? Or is it D, it's the busiest day of the year for plumbers? Black Friday. Why is it called that anyway? And question number two, which Christmas tune was actually written for Thanksgiving? Was that A, Jingle Bells? Or was it B, Here Comes Santa Claus? Or was it D, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen? Or D, Sleigh Ride? A Thanksgiving tune turned Christmas classic. Which song was that anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from OnThisDay.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of November 28th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1964 that Willie Nelson made his debut on the Grand Ole Opry. 1964, today. And it was 51 years ago today, 1974, that Elton John and John Lennon sang a duet of I Saw Her Standing There at Madison Square Garden in New York. The show was John Lennon's last stage appearance. That was 1974, today. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, Singers, Oboists, and Physicists Orchestrate a COVID-19 Strategy. In an unlikely collaboration, physicists and professional musicians studied how to limit COVID-19 spread during operatic performances. Hint, it involves instruments wearing masks. This is written by Catherine Wright and published on the 16th of August, 2022, in physics.aps.org. An opera aficionado, Philippe Bourian, regular visits to New York Metropolitan Opera House, colloquially known as the Met, came to an abrupt halt in March 2020 when COVID-19 hit the city, shutting down its theaters. But the Princeton University physicist was in luck. During the Met's 18-month shutdown, he was repeatedly serenaded in his laboratory by some of the Met's best singers and instrumentalists, including mezzo-soprano Isabel Leonard, who Bourian had heard perform just before the pandemic struck. The private concerts at the Princeton Lab were part of a study initiated by the Met's orchestra to gain scientific understanding of how the Met could resume performances without the cast and orchestra members all falling sick. They turned to Borian and his colleagues after learning that the team were already looking into the spread of COVID-19 by airflows produced from speaking. It was clear that the orchestra was struggling to find ways to play together, says Elizabeth Bowman, who at the height of the pandemic worked as the publicist for the Met's orchestral musicians. She says that the best way forward was for the group to enlist the help of researchers. To sing or play a wind instrument requires sustained exhalation. Scientists realized early on that COVID-19 can spread through the air, with dramatic evidence coming from super spreader events in which whole choirs came down with the disease after practicing together. The choirs in those cases were made up of amateur singers who stood shoulder to shoulder during practices. That proximity made it highly likely that they would breathe in a neighbor's air. Studies also suggested that the air emitted by amateur singers contained more droplets, and thus potentially more pathogens, than it did for people speaking the same words, but quantitative evidence remained absent. The news was labeling singers as super spreaders with little information to back up the statement, Bowman says. When the singers performed, the team found that the properties of the exhalations depended on the letter being sung. For vowels, the most commonly voiced sound for opera singers, the exhaled air moved at around half the speed during singing than it did during speaking. But it contained more droplets. These droplets rose as they exited the mouth, carried upward by a warm exhaled air, forming a roughly 10 centimeter wide buoyant cloud around the singer's head. For context, speaking and breathing led to clouds wider than 1 meter. In contrast, for consonants, the droplet-laden air traveled approximately 4 times faster during singing than speaking, moving in jet structures that extended for more than a meter. Since opera singers largely voice vowels, keeping consonants very short, Borian says that singing can be practiced safely in well-ventilated spaces when it comes to COVID-19 transmission. Even though the exhaled air contains more drops, it's rising rapidly, very close to the singer, he says. Wearing a mask reduces the risk even more by further slowing the outward expansion of exhaled air. The team found similar speed reductions for the air and droplets emanating from the ends of wind instruments while they were being played. But this air traveled further, 60 centimeters in just 3 seconds for a trombone, because of the funneling effects of the wind instrument's bells. Placing mass over the bells came out and cut the distance down to just 10 centimeters. Air also exited directly from the instrumentalist's mouths, showing up in the experiments in bursts of fast-moving air. The feature was most pronounced for the oboist. Playing the oboe requires slow, sustained exhalations, but at the end of a musical phrase, Borian and colleagues observed that the oboist rapidly expelled the air that remained in his lungs before taking his next breath. That rapid exhalation produced a forceful jet of drops that moved nearly 50 times faster than the air exiting the oboe's bell. The results suggest that when it comes to infection risk for orchestra players, the oboist is probably the most dangerous person to be placed next to. Borian says, "You definitely want to sit oboists further apart, while trombonists can be closer together." And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Rats Have Rhythm and Can Keep the Beat to Mozart, a New Study Shows. This is published in NPR on the 14th of November, 2022, by Ayana Archie. Rhythm has long been thought to be a uniquely human trait, but researchers have found that rats possess the ability and can keep the beat to Mozart, a new study shows. Scientists at the University of Tokyo found that rats' beat synchronicity came from the time constant of the brains, not their bodies, which is similar across species. Rats displayed innate, that is, without any training or prior exposure to music, beat synchronization, most distinctly within 120 to 140 BPM, beats per minute, to which humans also exhibit the clearest beat synchronization, said University of Tokyo Associate Professor Hirokazu Takahashi. Researchers equipped 20 rats with wireless accelerometers to measure their head movements. They were played one-minute excerpts of Sonata for Two Pianos, K448 by Mozart, at four different speeds, 75%, 100%, 200%, and 400% of the original speed. The study focused on responses to K448 by Mozart, but the study also played four other musical pieces to human and animal participants. Born This Way by Lady Gaga, Another One Bites the Dust by Queen, Beat It by Michael Jackson, and Sugar by Maroon 5. Demi Lovato's Let It Go introduces our rock and pop music news. The title of the article, Music Gifts for Kids, 10 Christmas Present Ideas for Music-Loving Children. This is published in BBC's Music Magazine by Hannah Nepalova. Every parent knows how tricky it can be hitting that narrow landing strip between educational and fun, and finding a gift for your kids that fits. Dream Fun popular singing wireless Bluetooth microphone with speaker. This karaoke microphone, which comes in a range of colors, is lucky to find favor with children of all ages. My four-year-old has had hours of fun testing out the ghostly echo function with repeat renditions of Let It Go from Frozen. But older children will also be seduced by the compact, user-friendly design. Just switch it on, connect via Bluetooth to your phone, then search for favorite songs on your YouTube or your phone to unleash the full sing-along potential of this nifty, surprisingly inexpensive little device. And there's also a rainbow piano musical mat with built-in demo songs, preset instrument sounds, song sheets included, rainbow-colored keyboard. And how about Winnie the Pooh music box? There's also a ukulele. How about a Munchkin Mozart Magic Cube? Or there's an electronic keyboard. How about a Instruments of the Orchestra jigsaw puzzle? Lots of gifts for kids that love music.
Song won't
Rihanna Giddens singing Libba Cotton's Shake Sugary introduces our local music news. The article's entitled Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducts North Carolina native Libba Cotton. This is published in the News and Observer on the 13th of November, 2022, by Eddie Dean as a special to the Washington Post. A song was nagging at Libba Cotton. Most times, the melody for a song came to her as she played her guitar. The words often followed close at hand, conjured by something from her life. Some songs didn't call out for words at all, but this one did, and she couldn't find them. The song was Shake Sugary, the song playing in the background now. This song had a calming effect on the unruly kids she cared for. Each evening when she came home exhausted from her work as a domestic for Washington's upper crust in Northwest D.C. in the mid-1960s. Brenda Evans, one of Cotton's great-grandchildren, recalls, "One particular night, Granny was playing this song and she said, 'Come on, children, can you all think of some words to add to this tune?' So we all sat up on the bed there and we had a good time adding verses. So all of us kids took part in this particular song. Now, which verse belongs to whom? I have no idea. But that's how we came up with Shake Sugary." Not long after, in 1965, Cotton was recording her second album and brought along 12-year-old Brenda to sing solo on Sugary. In the more than half century since, the song, with its childlike whimsy and surreal imagery, has taken on a life of its own. It's been covered by artists including Pat Boone, Bob Dylan, and more recently, Rihanna Giddens. Evans' rendition, with wise beyond her years vocals and memorable verses such as, "Have a little secret I ain't gonna tell. I'm going to heaven in a brown pea shell," has a charm that time has only enhanced. In 2019, it was featured in an episode of the TV series Big Little Lies. Well past 90, when she became the oldest woman to win a Grammy, Cotton enthralled audiences with her music and storytelling. And decades after her death in 1987, her legacy is alive in the National Museum of American History. In 2018 came a children's book, Libba, The Magnificent Musical Life of Elizabeth Cotton, by singer-songwriter Laura Veers, who performed Sugary on stage in D.C. that year with Evans. Cotton's latest honor came on November the 5th, 2022, with her induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's a well-deserved recognition for Cotton, who grew up in Carrboro, North Carolina. She was inducted as a recipient of the Early Influence Award. She joins an elite group of eight women musicians in this category, including Billie Holiday, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, and rockabilly whiz Rhonda Jackson. The Hall of Fame notes that Cotton earned this award for her intimate recordings and performances that inspired generations of artists and influenced countless guitar players. Few would deny the enduring influence of Cotton's signature song, Freight Train, a finger-picking tour de force from her debut album that still dazzles today. Composed when she was 11 years old, the song became a folk standard in the late 50s and 60s. It exemplifies her guitar style known as cotton picking, which has a pulsating syncopated rhythm akin to the rippling of a mountain stream. Even today, it's one of the first songs novices learn to play on acoustic guitar, with Cotton's version garnering 2.7 million views on YouTube. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? The answer to our first question, why is the Friday of this weekend called Black Friday? Is it A, it's a moody day due to all the overeating this day before? Is it B, it's the darkest day of the year in terms of hours of sunlight? Is it C, it's the brightest day of the year for merchants and shoppers? Or is it D, it's the busiest day of the year for plumbers? Correct answer? Answer C. While the day after Thanksgiving is in fact the busiest day of the year for plumbers, Black Friday actually has more to do with shopping. As noted in an article published in Britannica.com on the 18th of November, 2022, by Don Vaughn, titled, Why is it called Black Friday? The day following Thanksgiving, commonly referred to as Black Friday, has become one of the busiest shopping days of the year in the United States. National chain stores traditionally offer limited money-saving specials on a wide variety of goods in an effort to lure shoppers into stores while offering similar deals online. It is believed by many that the term Black Friday derives from the concept that businesses operate at a financial loss or in the red until the day after Thanksgiving, when massive sales finally allow them to turn a profit or put them in the black. However, this is untrue. A more accurate explanation of the term dates back to the early 1960s, when police officers in Philadelphia began using the phrase Black Friday to describe the chaos that resulted when large numbers of suburban tourists came into the city to begin their holiday shopping, and in some years, attend Saturday's annual Army-Navy football game. The huge crowds created a headache for the police, who worked longer shifts than usual as they dealt with traffic jams, accidents, shoplifting, and other issues. Within a few years, the term Black Friday had taken root in Philadelphia. City merchants attempted to put a prettier face on the day by calling it Big Friday. The phrase Black Friday, to signify a positive boost in retail sales, didn't grow nationwide until the late 1980s, when merchants started to spread the red-to-black profit narrative. Black Friday was described as the day stores began to turn a profit for the year and as the biggest shopping day in the United States. In truth, most stores saw their largest sales on the Saturday before Christmas. In more recent years, Black Friday has been followed by other shopping holidays, including Small Business Saturday, which encourages shoppers to visit local retailers, and Cyber Monday, which promotes shopping online. Giving Tuesday has also emerged to spur charitable donations. And the answer to our second question, which Christmas tune was actually written for Thanksgiving? Is it A, Jingle Bells, B, Here Comes Santa Claus, C, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, or D, Sleigh Ride? Correct answer? Answer A, Jingle Bells. As noted in an article by Rebecca Angel Bayer in the 9/9/22 issue of Southern Living magazine titled, The Popular Christmas Song Was Actually Written for Thanksgiving. We have some shocking news for you. The beloved Christmas carol sung cheerfully by millions every holiday season, Jingle Bells, wasn't actually intended to be a Christmas carol at all. That's not even the original name of the song. Shocked? We were. There are few songs that immediately trigger feelings of Yuletide cheer more than that catchy tune. But as Reader's Digest reported and Snopes confirmed, the jolly jingle was meant for an entirely different holiday, Thanksgiving. According to Reader's Digest, James Lord Pierpont wrote the song that he called One Horse Open Sleigh for his father's Sunday school class to perform on Thanksgiving. It also appears that he wasn't inspired by Santa and his famous sleigh pulled by magical reindeer. Nope. Legend has it that he was inspired by watching sleigh races in Medford, Massachusetts. One theory is that the song was popular so that children sang it again at Christmas time, thus associating it with Christmas. Another theory presumes that the only association with the holiday is the fact that the song talks about snow. While historians are fairly certain the tune was written in the 1850s, no one is sure when or where he wrote it. Could have been right there in Medford after the sleigh races, or he could have waited and written the famous song after he moved down south to Savannah, Georgia. We only know for certain that the song was published in 1857. It may not have been Pierpont's original intent, but the secular song is now a staple for Christmas carolers around the world. It has been recorded many times, but it was Bing Crosby's jazzy 1943 version that cemented Jingle Bell's place in popular culture and Christmas celebrations for eternity. As a tribute to the resilience of Ukrainians facing hardships, and as a transition into the holiday season, let's close out today's program with a Pink Martini cover of a Ukrainian winter well-wishing song that was never intended to become a Christmas song, but with lyric changes is now recognized worldwide as Carol of the Bells. Run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion to music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.